Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding, available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com. Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cozy colors in store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. Little did we know that when we started the week on Tuesday, this bank holiday week, with the phone call from Henry O'Brien about that horrific accident, freak accident he had that unfortunately resulted in him losing his vision, losing his eyesight and his left eye, and also now the prospect of losing the eye as well. And he spoke so movingly, and as you know, lots of people phoned in, and when they talk about they spoke about the great care. People are in similar situations for different reasons. And little did we know that I'd be starting the programme today with another, unfortunately, similar incident. Patrick McCone. Patrick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
I'm so sorry this has happened. Your daughter's 14. What happened?
So basically, herself and a group of friends, they'd been planning all week to meet up. Mm-hmm. And they went out to Miller's Lane. It's a place in Lotnacara, so it's a football field. And
in Galway, yeah.
In Galway,
yeah. City,
yeah. Just outside Galway City, and you know, they'd met up at earlier on in the day. They went to this place at about 6:30, and they were due to be back at their friend's house at 9 p.m. So they were staying overnight.
Okay.
And I received a call at about, well, it was my wife that received the call at about 7:50 that evening. We were out in recess, and it was a passerby who had reported that Lauren had been struck by a rocket, one of the screamers.
Oh my God.
And we heard that, and there was blood coming out, and we could hear the combustion in the background. She was screaming, and the children around her were screaming. So then we made our way back into University Hospital Galway, and she was examined by an eye doctor last night, but her eye was too closed, so they weren't able to draw any conclusions. They kept her overnight. They've been examining her today and this morning, but they can't get into the eye because there's too much inflammation there. So again, because they can't see it, so she can't see out and they can't see in. So now she's going through different medications to help reduce the inflammation. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that quells. So by tomorrow, then we have some news. Yeah. But we haven't been dealt bad news, but nor have we been dealt good news.
Yeah, and she was hit straight in the eye by this rocket, which came out of nowhere.
The details, yeah. She was walking down this lane, and Miller's Lane, and they heard the rocket firing. And she said she had turned around, and as soon as she turned around, it struck her in the face. And it struck her on the eye, and it definitely struck her because it drew blood, and there's blood inside her eye, and there's also pressure inside the eye now at the moment. It's her right eye that's affected.
She must have been.
And like, Joe, I'll also say, like, you know, there was a man passing by. He was with his 5-year-old child doing trick-or-treating. And it was, I believe it was he that called the ambulance. And then he called my wife, Sinead, let us know. Yeah, totally.
Well done, yeah. And Lauren got to hospital fairly quickly.
Ambulance, 11 minutes for the ambulance. The guards have been amazing. The hospital staff have been
that's good, yeah, brilliant, as we heard. It's an extraordinarily traumatic time.
Were you able to
talk to Lauren? How was she when you spoke to her?
Yeah, she was very upset.
Yeah.
You know, she was very upset when she spoke. Yeah. And her friends were very upset.
And a reminder again, the fireworks are illegal, and they're illegal for a reason.
Yeah, Joe, and I think there's a maliciousness here involved as well to some degree, because, you know, for a child that's only 5 foot tall, the trajectory that this thing came, this was aimed at a group of kids and nobody seeming to take any intention of the consequences, you know. And this could have been anybody's child that went out last night.
And hopefully not, but the consequences can be catastrophic.
Yeah,
as we heard there, and again unrelated, many of them calls during the week about the injury, to how fragile the eye is now, how also brilliant the eye surgeons are in the country as well, how absolutely brilliant they are and advancing all the time. And the Lauren hasn't, well, I don't know how you'd ever find whoever shot off the rocket. And they would argue, well wouldn't they be, all they could say was you were possessing it illegally. But they said we shot it up into the air. They would, anyway.
Well, somebody knows something, Joe.
Yeah.
And, you know, this isn't the first time it has happened.
Yeah, I know
a similar
that.
Case happened in Galway 3 years ago.
I remember it well.
And a young 17-year-old lost her eye.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think it's time that a conversation, like, I'm sick with this now today. Absolutely sick of it.
Yeah.
You know, and this is going to happen again next year. And 14-year-old kids and any child should have the right to be in a safe environment and not to be struck and possibly left with life-threatening issues as a result of, you know, I don't know, like the intent of some other individual. People need to start copping on, I think.
Yeah, hear. Has Lauren got siblings?
No, she's her only daughter.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But even to explain to our friends who weren't there what happened, it's just...
Yeah, you know, the friends now have been very good. Like,
yeah.
They've been traumatised as well by it. Like, they were there to witness it. And, you know, like, she's a great bunch of friends. You know, like, everybody was brilliant and just whatever happened that night.
Okay. And as you say, it was only last night, please God, now.
Yeah,
and she got to hospital fairly quickly, which is great.
Yes.
And that helps. And it's no, I don't know what you heard earlier on the week, Patrick, but we've one man. Actually, we two people. One man who was in Budapest in 1956, long before you were born, I suspect.
Yeah.
Or indeed, Lauren's granddad was born. But he was shot in the eye by the Russians.
That was the revolution when the Russians invaded.
But he didn't get medical help for 2 days.
Wow.
Given the chaos and the invasion. And anyway, and then we had someone else who wasn't able to get medical help for 2 days as well. So a horrific situation, but everyone on board now, medics, Gardaí, paramedics, sorry, as well. So please God, Patrick, she will be, we heard people who made full recoveries as well have had eye injuries. So there's a lot of hope out there. There's a lot of hope. I cannot imagine what yourself and your partner are going through, and I cannot imagine what Lauren, 14 years of age, is going through. So please God, everything gets better and better and better over the next few days.
Thank you, but a
salutary warning. Really, if anyone listened to this, I'm grounded by it. I say a lot of people are stuck to the ground. Listen, fireworks are dangerous. There is a reason why they are illegal.
Well, this child is a parent. This child has two parents, possibly.
Yeah, yeah.
And parents should be now asking their kids in Galway, anybody who was there in Miller's Lane last night, did you have screamer rockets? Do you know if anybody released it?
Yeah.
And whoever released it knew, because as soon as it was released, they would have heard the screams of my child.
Good point. Very good point.
I want to find out who did it.
Yeah.
That's been honest with you, because I don't believe that this should go... you know, without any consequences. I think, you know, because this is going to happen again and something has to be done, and a greater awareness campaign done about. Like, I spoke with the guards last night, 200 children all in one particular area. And, like, the guards are powerless because even if they clear them, they're going to come back in through different areas, you know. So,
but the only of those 200 children, the only people who were doing something illegal were the people who had the fireworks.
Yes, yes.
The others were enjoying themselves and relaxing and being together. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, totally. You're not saying, and they were doing nothing wrong. Whoever launched those fireworks were, and as you said, you would have heard the scream.
Yeah,
they would have heard that scream, and I can't imagine it. So you're told on. It's fingers crossed for you at this stage and for Lauren.
Yeah, please God.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well then, for those listeners who pray, I'm sure they will pray for Lauren to whoever God they pray to, and for the others, I know people are with you, Patrick, insofar as thinking positively can give you strength and give Lauren strength. But please keep in touch, and we'll, as I say, remind you, and at this awful, awful time you're going through, one of the great lessons from the stories earlier on in the week, that there is hope, that there is hope. Patrick McKeown, kind regards to your beautiful daughter, Lauren, and indeed her friends, but above all, Lauren, and a full and speedy recovery, Lauren. Those words are just coming from me and they sound meaningless, but that's the reaction we're getting on the screen here. Full and horror, people saying a horror story beyond belief, but a full and speedy recovery. Please,
thanks,
God.
Joe.
Patrick, thank you. Look after yourself. You look after yourself. Okay, by the way, the guards in Salt Hill are obviously investigating this, so go to your local Garda station. Okay, Patrick McKeown, father of Laura, thank you so much. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
The word is ap nauseum or ap nauseous. I heard it on a new BBC Radio 4 programme last night called Unspeakable. And it's basically people who are totally, completely, absolutely fed up with having to download all these various apps that got through your life. For example, if you have an electric car, lucky enough to have an electric car, I think I have 6 different apps at this stage for 6 different charging companies. And it's Shayborne of this parish, who you heard an hour ago during the promo, sitting in for Louise this week. He has 184 apps. He doesn't even have 184 friends, but he's 184 apps on his phone, believe me. Is that a record? Now, there's a downside to this, and Tony Gillespie in Donegal has discovered it, and one of the listeners has contacted me about it, and it's very unfair. Tony.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, what happened? You've realised something. Because you don't have a smartphone, you're at a financial disadvantage in supermarkets like Lidl.
Yeah, exactly. If you go shopping in Lidl and you haven't got a smartphone, when you go to the till to pay your whatever you've bought, the first thing they ask you at the till, have you got an app?
Okay.
And if you don't have it, you're losing out on special offers, you know, which can be, some of the special offers can be quite significant.
Up to 20%, more, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes they're even in the vegetables, you know, like, I would go in there some days just to buy bits and pieces, you know, nothing major. Mm-hmm. But the vegetables, some days there, maybe one or two of the vegetables could be on this special offer as well. And it tells you that it's a Lidl Plus. And with that showing on it, you have to use your app to get the discount.
And so, let's give people an example. You're in a queue at Lidl. You bought, I'm just giving a random, you bought some mince pies, you bought some mushrooms, you bought some salmon darns, a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc, and there's another special, an Argentinian white, looks lovely, and you bought a Christmas tree for the this down there. And you would, the person in front of you who has a smartphone that are expensive, as you know, expensive to have and expensive to run, they would have paid 20% less than you did. So your bill, I'm trying to work out the difference here, 3, 4, 6, and 7 on the 3, 13, another 2, and another, if you have Lidl Plus. They would have paid, on just those 5 or 6 items, listeners, they would have paid 20% less than you did. They would have paid nearly £20 less than you did.
Exactly, it's as simple as that.
Because you were not... For whatever reason, and God, there's no entitlement or indeed obligation to have a smartphone, but they're saying if you have a smartphone, we will give you a significant discount on a significant number of products.
Yeah, I don't have a smartphone, Joe. I don't need a smartphone. I don't want a smartphone.
Yeah, fair enough.
I have an ordinary phone. You know, I make a call, take a call. You know, send a text, take a text. My wife has a smartphone. My family's 2 daughters, they have smartphones. I would say there's thousands upon thousands of people in this country who don't have smartphones. You know, I'm a senior citizen. I don't need a smartphone. So
yeah, And we're told that a lot of children, a lot of younger people who do shop in Lidl as well, they shouldn't. They shouldn't have smartphones.
That's the other side of the story. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it's really a big. Everybody likes a bargain, but you're not going to get a bargain in Lidl's unless you have a smartphone.
By the way, the musherooms. If you have a smartphone, you get 50% off. You get them for half price.
That's right.
The salmon, you get 16% off. The wine, you get 20% off.
Yeah.
The artificial Christmas tree, you get another 20% off.
Yeah.
Now, this is go on, keep going.
Yeah, I think it was an air fryer. I think it's 99 euro, but if you the app, it's 30% off, which, you know, it's a huge...
Now, is there a Lidl card on your key ring? Do they do it?
No, they don't. Not that I know of now.
Because they say, by the way, Christmas outdoor lights, 18 euro, if you have a smartphone, which you could light up your garden with anyway. Christmas outside lights, 18 euro. If you have the app, we give it to you for 13.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yes. Yeah, well, nice. Now, in fairness, this is what Lidl say. Do Lidl have a spokesperson at this stage? Come on, you're part of what we are, Lidl. Just 220 stores. Create a spokesperson. Well, Lidl offer weekly Super Saver promotion. Yeah, I know you do. Two of these offers on veg and meat and poultry. Two of them are for smartphones, for the app. We also, I know you do loads of promotions across the store. I know that. Lidl Plus, they offer additional offers. That's their point. How many? Lidl Plus, which is the app, offer additional, which you have to have on a smartphone, offer additional exclusively to shoppers. Yeah, we know that. That's the point Tony is making here. On the app, Tony, brace yourself. On the app, you can also get personalised offers, digital receipts and recipes, etc.
I didn't know that.
As I say, there's now a word for it, app nauseam.
Definitely, yeah. Other stores around here, you know, they have got what they call a loyalty card or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Super Value, and you just when you pay for yours, go to the till, you just produce the card, and they scan it or whatever, and that's you get your offers there, and then or your specials.
And they use that's a
simple thing, you know. That's not your. But to go into Lidl now, you know, it's so unfair, you know, to. Yeah. If you have
and
an
what,
app
do, what your, do Lidl get from the app that they don't get from a card? You know what I mean? I know they, all the stores do it and they're allowed to do it and they harvest information, which is, I'm going to say, I have no issue with it. I know people think the CIA are going through. But
what Lidl should be doing, should be giving out smartphones as a special offer maybe for people who want them.
But then you'd have to have a smartphone to avail of the offer, Tony.
Well, you'd have it if Lidl give it to you for nothing.
And then they call, what do, which is nonsense, he said, nearly joking. They call your phone a dumb phone.
I don't know what they call, but it does me anyway, and I'm not, I'm no way dumb, Joe, or
of course.
It's like a lot of things now in modern life, they're not made for to be make things easier for you. Make it more difficult.
And everything, we're told that the government are insisting that there has to be an option to pay cash, that everything can't be contactless. But Lidl people might say, well, go shop, 51551, by the way, is the text number. Go shop somewhere else.
Yeah, well, you can do
which
that.
Which is a funny thing, which is, they're not saying it. But if they did say it, it'd be a funny thing for a supermarket group to say. Larry Connell, Larry.
Hiya, Joe.
You were saying what I was trying to cough me way through there. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, the point I would make is that the choice is ours, really, if we want a smartphone or not. I mean, basically what we're doing is we're giving Lidl or any of the companies our personal information, our buying habits and whatever else, and we're being tracked through that.
Yeah, but
and the price we get for that then is a discount.
Aren't you giving that in your Super Value card anyway, your Tesco card? Why does it have to be an app?
Well, that's the way things are going, unfortunately. it makes it easier for the companies to follow us. And also, it's handy because people pay. I mean, the number of people now that look at you in shock. I was in Dublin for last week.
Okay.
And I was almost treated with a look of surprise when I was paying for something and I offered cash. Because everybody is tapping. And look, the choice of that man, if he doesn't want a smartphone, that's fine. There's nobody going to force him to get one.
Yeah, but
he's not handing over any information.
If you got a card, which is the same thing, would you be prepared to use a little card that was on your key ring, Tony?
Oh,
with a QR code or whatever, a barcode on it. Which other supermarkets?
I would use that.
But you wouldn't need a phone. Well, Larry, the point is you need a phone that costs, 1,600, 1,700 quid to get
Joe. You go into a phone shop there and you will buy a second-hand smartphone for anything from 100 to 300 or 400 euro.
Okay,
you don't have to have the latest one. You go back and you get an iPhone.
Okay, Tony.
I don't want a smartphone. I don't need a smartphone. I might need a smartphone to shop at Lidl, but you're saying, if I don't like it, lump it. But that's not the point. If you're looking for a bargain,
if you don't like it, you don't have to lump it. But the choice is yours. If you don't want a smartphone, you don't have to have one.
No, but
you don't have to give your information to Lidl. And then you lose out on the discount.
What I want as a bargain, any place I'm going to get a bargain, I'll go to Lidl if the bargain's available. But I don't think you should need a smartphone to get a bargain or to get a refund or whatever. I don't think you're talking about this. That's a modern world we're living in.
You don't need a smartphone to get a refund, because you get a refund if you produce a receipt. That's why if you buy hardware, you should always take a receipt for it.
Hang on, Larry. You get a... Don't muddy the issue. The issue is, if you have a smartphone, you get a better deal in Lidl. Why is that?
Fair enough.
Why is that?
Because you're trading them your information.
You can do that anyway. You can do that anyway with the little QR code or the barcode you put on your key ring. You're getting the same information.
No, they don't do that. That's Super Value and probably Tesco's and the others. But I shop mainly in Lidl because it's the closest shop to me. And they don't have that facility. So,
and do they have a big sign up in Lidl at the door saying, "We love smartphone users"?
We
cherish you more. We cherish you, actually. We love you 20% more than everyone else. Sheila, stay there, Larry. Sheila, Joe at RT.ie. Sheila.
Yes, hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, Joe, I wrote to you about this very subject, I'd say up on 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I was told not to mention my local town, but I was shopping at Lidl since the start. It began in this my town. And I constantly asked the staff why I was being discriminated against. And all the staff said the very same as I did. And I wrote to Lidl headquarters and they had no interest whatsoever. So I'm a lucky person that there's an Aldi in my town and I transferred there. And I also said to them when I went in, "I hope you don't start this smartphone lark." And they said, "No, we don't intend to."
Oh, you said it to Aldi?
Oh, I go to Aldi now. Okay. And I'm very lucky there's one nearby.
Ooh. Well, in every town now. No issue about where you're from.
Maybe that man in Donegal hasn't one in his town. But all I can say is, please, everybody.
But Aldi's, that's what we should ask. Have Aldi, Have Aldi, Tesco, our Super Value, our Dunes, our Duns, have they any intention of introducing an app which can only be used on your smartphone? Another app. And can I ask, Sheila, if you have a mobile phone, what type of mobile phone do you have?
I have a little Nokia, and that's all I intend having. Now, there is
there is a smartphone if someone else has one in the house. But Larry said you can buy it, which is news to me, but I'm sure it's true. You can buy a second-hand smartphone for a couple of hundred quid. Would you be tempted, Sheila?
I don't want one, and it's not even a financial thing. I'm quite happy with my little Nokia.
Okay. And how long have you had your little Nokia?
Oh, good few years, and I've told my local Vodafone shop never to get rid of them, and they said it's still as popular as ever.
Okay. And they're still, I think, the biggest selling mobile phone of all time, of a single issue mobile phone. Okay, so you basically moved from Lidl to Aldi. Simple as that.
Absolutely. And Joe, I wrote to you about this a few years ago.
Okay,
I'm so glad that I heard you earlier on today that you were going to cover it.
Okay, and Lidl only have, they don't do the little key fob and
the
key card.
No, so I held up my Nokia to them and said, can I get that free offer on my Nokia? And they just laughed. And even the manager in my local shop, he's a lovely man, but I just have stopped going altogether.
Oh, well, that's their loss, unfortunately. Okay, Sheila, but they don't offer the key fob. Lidl are the only ones who don't.
Thanks for highlighting it, Joe.
Yeah,
I'm delighted you did.
And Sheila, I'm sorry I didn't read your letter 2 years ago. I can't read everything, but someone, be assured, someone read it.
Well, someone better late than never, Joe.
And thank you for sending it. And we're still available on the post, the wonderful postal service, Liveline at RTE Dublin 4. Rita Fitzgerald, Rita. See you, Sheila.
I'm thinking about Tycho.
Rita, are you on a phone or are you on two empty bachelor's beans cans with a bit of twine?
No, I'm on a phone. I'm on a phone.
I know you're on a phone, but what type of phone is it?
It's a modern phone. I just bought it.
Well, Rita, stay there. We'll take a little break. We'll take a little break and we try and get a better line. Rita, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cozy colours. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Calling Rita Fitzgerald. Rita.
Hello, Joe.
Oh, very good. You're back on.
Good.
Is it a smartphone? Well, any phone you would have in your hand, Rita, becomes a smartphone because you're very smart. But you have a smartphone.
Oh, yeah.
And what's...
But, Joe, it's funny that this issue has come up.
Yes.
Because I've become aware very much how we're treating people who are of an older generation like myself, but I can do it, and also people who cannot use technology.
Okay.
Now, we have in our country is legal money.
Legal
Some
tender,
shops
yeah.
are not even accepting that now. I actually rang the Taoiseach's office and the Minister's for Finance about this issue because I think that the basic rights of people who have worked all their lives or people who are not techie, I think undemocratic what they're doing.
Okay, and did you... So what you got the number of the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach's phone number, his office...
Oh, yeah. Well, I was speaking to somebody in the office, and they were lovely.
And what did you said, my name is Rita Fitzgerald, and this is my issue.
Yes, and I said, to me, somebody has to look at this, because people, we are really treating as second-class citizens. And to me, the fact that legal tender is not being accepted
Well, that's illegal.
Well, it's happening.
I know. Imagine you or me standing there having a row with a shopkeeper saying this is illegal, and he says, get out of my shop.
So be it. Yeah. I take myself out and go somewhere. But I think it's something the government should look at, because it's giving too much power over functions to shops, etc., they shouldn't have, because we must cherish our older generation. We must cherish those who cannot use technology.
And Rita, did you realise would you download the Lidl app onto your smartphone?
No, I don't. I know, but sure. Why? No, I'm not talking about. I can do it myself.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm talking. Most people, we are excluding in a democratic society.
But Lidl would say,
and
they have...
Go on, yes.
No, Lidl would say, that's the way we do an app instead of a little card on your key ring. And we have other offers available across the store which are not which are available to everybody, no matter what type of phone you have or none.
Joe, I'm not thinking even about Lidl. I think... far wider implications.
Okay.
The fact that people are going into shops won't. Yeah. They won't accept money. And then, so what's happening? Other people are managing money, the people's money, who can well do it themselves. I think it's a democratic disgrace, okay. I have to be honest.
Well, then, if you have had that experience, Rita, which you tell me you have, off air...
Yes.
I want you to tell Leon, who'll talk to you in a second, one of our producers, I want you to not on air, because we need to check. We need to give them all the right of reply. If you give the name of the shops, we will ring the shops and put it to them.
I can't even... I was in another place. I didn't even know... I don't even know what the name of the shop was. But it has struck me for a while, because I... we become a cashless society. I think cashless is fine for those who like it.
Yeah, hear, hear. But the government have said there has to be, Jack Chambers has said it, the minister and Pascal, the other minister, that I think they both said it, there has to be, there has to be an option. But anyway, Rita, on another moment, in a few moments, give us the names, if you can remember the names of the shops.
No, I don't know.
Should okay, well, maybe happen? maybe other people will have that experience.
Yeah, but I think the government, I think the government should be sending out a notice, or put it on the paper.
I think they have,
You must. Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the person was just they wouldn't accept it.
Yeah, I know. I know, and I take your word for it. I take your word for it and let the message go out. Rita Fitzgerald, good to meet you, Margaret. Where's Marie? Tesco.
Hello, I'm here, Joe. Yeah, I'm here, Joe.
Come in to me, Marie, then. Yes.
I'm here, Joe. Joe, I shop. I'm an elderly person, and I don't have a smartphone because I have arthritis in my hands and I can't manage one.
Ah.
And I have a simple Nokia. But I've shopped in Tesco and have done for years. And they give, for older people, they give free deliveries. And I would order a lot of stuff every now and then.
Well done, Tesco.
And now they won't give me my points. You know the way they used to send points out in the post. They won't do that now, and I can't access them. But I want to take up on that point that previous speaker said. She talked about the necessity to get the government to send out notices to people to accept cash.
Yeah.
Now, I want to give you something which you can easily check.
Yeah.
I came across this in the Irish Times some months back. It would have been in the spring, I think.
Okay.
And it was an article by Naomi O'Leary, who's the Irish Times EU correspondent.
Very brilliant journalist.
Yes.
Brilliant
journalist.
And
this is even more brilliant when you hear what I have to say. She said that after COVID, there was a lot of money apparently given to the country by the EU for COVID.
Mm.
And when Micheál Martin was the Taoiseach, he was at the heads of government meeting in Europe. And she said that the quid pro quo for the money given by the EU for COVID was that Micheál Martin should push the digital economy. And he's been talking about the digital economy now for a long time.
Yeah, well, that's fair. That's allowed.
Yeah, but basically they're speaking out of both sides of their mouth
together. Yeah, but
together.
Somehow, Marie...
And they're saying there should be cash, but there isn't. They're pushing the digital economy.
Well, the one thing... But we know that. And obviously before COVID and they wanted to get away from checks.
Yeah, but it'd be at the expense,
But somehow, I don't think, Micheál Martin...
No, it's at the expense of cash.
Yeah, I know that. But the government have said quite clearly that has to be an option. Now, and somehow... Micheál Martin has been going across to Brussels and back again, and Strasbourg and back again, more times probably than he's been to Cork in the last 40 years. I can't imagine them being pushed around, being told, we'll only give you money if you... He wouldn't.
No, but the money
I know what
already,
he'd tell them to
the
do.
Money, the money was already given, and this was at a subsequent meeting, and they were told to push the digital economy. Now, I went to Tesco it would have been the beginning of this year, or maybe last year, because they had a notice up to say that they wouldn't be taking cash anymore, just card. And I said, that's fine, just tell your boss that I won't be
we'll find out from Tesco. You're telling me now Tesco don't take cash?
No, Tesco do take cash, but at the point when they said they wouldn't be taking cash anymore...
Okay, they changed their mind.
Okay,
now Marie,
finally,
you've hit on another issue, which is, I think, a fantastic point. Some people, even if they wish to, cannot because of arthritis in your case, cannot use a smartphone. So
that
is discriminating against people who, for a medical reason, cannot use a smartphone. I think that's an incredible point.
I actually got a smartphone, Joe.
And you couldn't use it because of your...
I wasn't hitting the buttons on it.
Okay, well said. Okay, Marie, and I'm so sorry. I know my own mother has arthritis, and it's very, very difficult. Okay, Marie, Larry, Tony, Rita, Sheila, Patrick, good Emile, Amago, Joe at RT.ie on any phone.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, back to smartphones. Oliver Mullen, you say it's a very good point that Rita made about people with medical conditions like arthritis can be disbarred from using the Lidl situation because you need an app on your smartphone to get 20% off. You say don't be put off, Oliver. Go ahead.
Well, it's in relation to using the phone without your fingers if you have arthritis.
Yeah.
You can use the phone. I use my phone. I don't have arthritis as such, maybe a little bit. But I just say, hey, Google, and I can ring anyone I like. Usually it's best if it's in your contacts. Now, if you can't put your contacts in, you go into the supplier or your phone or your youngest child, and they'll do it for you. So it's very... good knowledge for a lot of people with arthritis or other finger difficulties. They can just talk to their phone and just communicate as if they're using their fingers.
Okay, good one. But I was unaware that people with difficulties with their hands, and a lot of people do, as you know, would have difficulty using the screen, the touch screen and the smartphone.
Yes.
Whereas the old Nokia phone, you just press. It's a much easier, it's a much easier way to go on. Stay with us, Oliver. Where's Brendan Chapman? Brendan.
Hello, Joe. I'm here.
Good. Your point, please, Brendan.
Yeah, I've got a tale of mystery as well, Sheridan, but mine is set in modern times.
Modern times.
With regards to discounts, and particularly in SuperValu. The problem with they have a sliding scale of discounts, which max out at 20% when you spend 50 and upward.
Okay.
But if you spend less than that, you get significantly lower returns. Now, I think this is discriminatory against single people.
But is it the same percentage?
No, not at all.
Okay.
It's significantly different. Now, I recently, and it's hard to find out, but sometimes I have been at lower levels and then you have to build up to higher levels, but you would get something less, maybe 10 towards 10%, but I can't be exact about that. But the problem is, you know, single people and maybe older people would want to go shopping several times, you know, get fresh food and wouldn't spend up to 50. Now, Dunn Stores, for example, have a flash rate of 20% off.
And they have
and
a 50.
They do it.
You get a voucher when you spend 50.
Yeah. No, it's 25.
Okay.
So it's much more spent. Yeah, it's 25. And you get 20% off, which is 5 of 25.
Okay.
So I think that's much more suitable for older people.
Well, Brendan, so is that not just Dunn's being on the ball and competition and SuperValu are often on the ball as well? It's a dog eat dog out there in the supermarket world, isn't it?
But what I say is that it's not a level playing field for one offering sliding scales and the other offering flat scales. So everybody can get it.
Well, you strike me, thankfully, as a man who might have raised this issue with SuperValu, did you?
Yes, I did, of course.
And?
But they say they can do nothing about it. It's all governed by software, and they can't make any manual adjustments.
So the computer says no?
Yeah. Well, they say no. But, So, you know, even if you could accumulate a spend over a period of a week or some other arrangement or have...
And what about those points and points mean prizes and all that carry on? Does that kick in, no?
Sorry, which prizes?
You know, when you get points, do they not all add up sequentially?
No, you can't. Basically, you do get other kind of points as well. But for the main aspect is the shopping discount. And that, as I say, You have to spend 50 to get them.
So your point is people who buy small amounts, especially fresh food, which is the way to buy them.
Yes.
Don't be buying, you can't buy fresh food for a month, are at a disadvantage. And what do you think, Brendan, of the item that started this debate about Lidl, the only way you get 20% off on some items, is if you have a smartphone. What do you think of that scenario?
Yeah, I can see with modern technology that some people are discommoded, but I suppose like people who are blind can't drive a car, you know, it's unfortunate.
But now hang on now, Brandon. There's a difference between being blind, God forgive me, not afflicted anyone, and not having a smart. I know you don't mean it that way, but
But somebody was talking about having problems with their hands pressing buttons. I'm saying that if you have any sort of physical problem, I can understand that. That's very hard to case for everything.
Yeah, okay. Well, people who are visually impaired can use them, including smartphones. But anyway, the technology in fact, is a great help to them. Stay with us, Brendan. Yeah. I want to bring Hilda. Hilda, sorry for holding you there, Hilda. Hilda.
How you doing, Joe? How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Oh, loud and clear.
Okay, good. Good to talk to you.
Likewise.
Well, my point, well, I actually agree with your last caller there now.
Brendan,
But I also feel that it has come to pass now that people of a certain age are being excluded from society if they don't know the ins and outs of using a smartphone or a laptop or anything to do with, if generally not tech savvy. Even if you're looking after an older person and you've got to pay their bill, they can't. They have no way of going online to pay their bill. Everything is online. Everything is. You can't walk into the bank now because, you know, they just don't deal with you really.
And if you ever, this whole thing in our world now is app nauseous and app nauseum. Have you ever downloaded an app?
Yeah, oh gosh, yeah. I have many apps on my phone, and I'm able to use a certain amount of them.
Okay.
But I downloaded the Duns app when it came out first.
Okay.
And I had terrible difficulty each time I went to the checkout. I felt like a fool because when you'd go and try and get the app up on the screen, it wasn't connecting.
It needs a connection. Your smartphone to use your app needs invariably 5G, which isn't everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I lost out on my points, and the cashier would say to you, you can pick them up the next time you're in. But that's inconvenient. I might not be in for another month,
On we go. Okay, Hilda, thanks indeed. That's Hilda Mullen, Brenda Chapman, Oliver Mullen, Katie Grania, all our other callers. Thank you so much. Back on Monday, series producers Annette Egan, producer Rachel Graham, BCO Leon Dunn, Harry Buckless on sound, and on Sunday night at 10:30, The Meaning of Life. Number 3 in the current series with the wonderful, the fascinating Ricky Tomlinson, who you all know from Royal Family and a number of other incarnations. But Ricky, and I interviewed him, of all places, a beautiful location, in the hotel in Portmarnock where he was staying, and he tells in the interview why he loves that particular spot. That's Meaning of Life, Sunday night at 10:30, RT Radio 1. And Anna Geary is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cozy colours. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And there you see, I mentioned Sheridan Le Fanu, and he came up in light of all the attention that Bram Stoker got, and a number of people, including Grania Walsh, wrote to the paper saying, hang on, there is a Le Fanu. How do I pronounce it, Grania? In Ballyferm, we call it Le Fanu Road, which is the wrong pronunciation.
Well, there's a number of ways, Joe, of pronouncing it. The family pronounce it Le Fanu nowadays. Originally, they were a Huguenot family. They escaped religious persecution.
And what are the other ways? Because obviously the people...
Le Fanu. Le Fanu. if you were going for a more French pronunciation, but the family itself say they don't mind how you pronounce the name at all.
Okay.
It's just good to, that Sheridan is getting some recognition for his body of work nowadays.
Well, is there any more recognition to him in Ireland than La Fania, Le Fanu? The people in the Porteous House in Ballyfermot used to call it La Fania, we call it La Fania Road, where we all went to school. Is there any other memoriam to Sheridan Le Fanu in Ireland, apart from a road in Ballyer?
Well, we have a little festival down here in East County Limerick, in Abingdon Maru, where Sheridan and his family lived in the early 19th century. So we started that festival. It's a little local festival,
well done,
celebrating the connection to the area. Sheridan was a very well-known writer of Gothic stories in the 19th century. That's how he made his living.
Mm-hmm.
And he went up to Trinity to become a barrister, didn't ever practice, got writing, and took it from there. And he wrote a number of stories now that people might know, like Uncle Silas, the child who went with the fairies, The House by the Churchyard, which is set in Chapel Lizard.
Okay,
and they all have this ghostly, otherworldly, but not gory, not a gory way of psychological horror rather than than sort of gory horror. They often say that you don't actually even know if there are ghosts in some of his stories, but they're often based in Irish folklore.
Okay.
And that's the influence of living in East County Limerick in his teenage years is reputed to have influenced actually the kind of stories that ended up as vampire stories in his own writing and in Bram Stoker's later on. He was an influence on Bram Stoker.
And how many, give us his oeuvre, how many books did he publish? How many short stories? How many?
I believe he published hundreds of short stories.
Wow.
And he often worked them and reworked them into different stories. He was trying to make his living, so he reworked his material. So, for example, there's a story set here locally in Capercullen Glen, Ultúr de Lacy. And it's a kind of a precursor to a more well-known version of the first female vampire, Carmilla, that he wrote at a later stage. And basically, it's very much those kind of stories of demonic possession. A young woman living in a lost and lonely glen, far away from anything, and suddenly starts to pine away, to hear strange music, and eventually disappears one day, and there's been a fiend, you know, seen around the place. And that he worked up over his life into a story of something a little bit more like we would see a contemporary vampire, where there was no suggestion of that there was anyone biting her throat in that story, but it kind of goes that way in later stories. So you see how something has evolved through his work. He wrote several novels. The House by the Churchyard is one, the most famous one, but lots of.
And
lots
he was,
of
wasn't he collection. Born? He was born in Chapel Lizard, wasn't he, in Dublin there?
He was born, yes, he was. His father was the rector in the Phoenix military institution.
School, and a hospital there. It's still there.
It's St.
Mary's Hospital in the park, and has an incredible historic graveyard there, which is well worth visiting. But I on your instigation and your interest, I looked up Sheridan Le Fanu, and by the way, La Fania Road in Ballyfermot goes down to Chapel Lizard. That's the connection, I presume.
Oh, that's
goes leads you straight down the hill into Chapel Lizard. I thoroughly enjoy it, mainly because I was taken by the title. This is written, and like, what year are we talking? 1872 and 1850. And he published this in Trinity, Dublin University, as it was called, Trinity College Magazine. And it's called, it reads like something from the Garda logbook in Kevin Street, An Account of Some Strange Disturbances in Anger Street, which is in Dublin, as you know. But I love the opening line, just to try and get me. By the way, a lot of these are available free online now. It is not worth telling, this story of mine. At least, not worth writing. told indeed, as I have sometimes been called upon to tell it, to a circle of intelligent and eager faces lighted up by a good after-dinner fire on a winter's evening, with a cold wind rising and wailing outside and all snug and cosy within. It has gone off, though I would say, who should not, indifferent and well. I just love that opening.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It is not worth telling, story of my life. It is not worth telling this story of mine, at least not worth writing. A brilliant open line. So there's lots of, what would you recommend, Grainne, as for a novice?
I would recommend starting with Madame Crowell's Ghost and Other Stories. So okay. That in that was collected by the great mystery writer M.R. James, and 50 years after Lessing Sheridan's death, saying he's being forgotten. He regularly seems to be refound again over the years. But that is a very good collection because they're short stories, and several of them are set in the area of East County Limerick, where I am now, in fact.
Yeah.
But the other great one is Uncle Silas. There was a film made of that recently, Lies We Tell, by an Irish director, and it actually won an award at the Irish Television and TV Drama Awards this year.
Oh,
so
well,
that would be well worth seeing the film or reading the book,
and
Uncle Silas.
He has descendants. You mentioned him there earlier on.
He does. So his brother was William Leffenhugh, who was a railway engineer. Totally different character. Where Sheridan was prone to dark thoughts and writings and was a bit of a recluse, his brother William was an engineer, was very outgoing, great raconteur, knew everyone in Dublin. And he looked after his brother, actually, as he kind of became more reclusive and fell in hard times. But he had a very large family, and his great-granddaughter, Nicola Leffenhugh, a composer, came over to our festival just this year to talk about all the women in the family who have been published, going right back to Sheridan's mother, Emma Lucretia Dobbins.
Okay, great stuff.
She was an amazing woman. She stole Lord Edmund Fitzgerald's dagger.
So how long has your festival been going, Grainne?
3 years.
Oh,
now.
Well done. Now, 3 years. Remember, after 3 years, if you keep it going for 3 years, please God, that opens the gate for more funding from the Arts Council, that you can keep it going. For it's now established. Hopefully it's now established. Isn't it, Grainne? You tell me it's now established.
Yeah.
And it will keep going for a fourth year at least.
We hope so.
Done.
Thank you very much
indeed. I'm taken by that. An account of some strange disturbances in Ainger Street in Dublin. There'll be some strange disturbances in just beyond Ainger Street in Dublin next Tuesday night. It's in Whelan's in Wexford Street, because that's where Paul Williams, the crime writer, is launching his new book. I read it. It's fantastic, called Crooks. The stories behind the headlines, and the reason why I read it with particular interest is that a number of chapters are taken up with stories that happened on this programme, Liveline. The book is called Crooks by Paul Williams. Katie Mishler. Katie, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing today?
You are also... I'm doing great. You're also Sheridan Leffenhugh. You've done your postdoctoral research... You're a postdoctoral researcher studying Irish Gothic literature. Is he up there? You like him, obviously.
Oh, he's fantastic. Part of my research is recovering a lot of forgotten writers. You know, as Grainne said before, that it seems to be the fate of a lot of Ireland's supernatural writers who were at one point quite famous during the 19th century, for them to be forgotten and for them to be rediscovered. But Leffenhugh has always had some sort of enduring popularity, and he really has had such a huge influence, I think, on all forms of Irish genre fiction, from crime fiction and to ghost stories and, of course, vampire fiction as well.
And I'm especially interested because I don't think it would have been known, Grainne, you mentioned there, about the crime fiction.
Absolutely. He had an interest in all things that are sort of dark, all things having to do with the macabre. He didn't write anything very gory in terms of horror fiction, but he's definitely a precursor for it.
Okay, and is he still in print, Katie, do you know?
Oh,
can people get him?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So his most famous collection is one called In a Glass Darkly. It collects his most famous short fiction, the story you mentioned, Upon Some Strange Disturbances on Anger Street, which is just a completely creepy story itself. Two students from Trinity with, a haunted bed
house. Which they take, really which they get offered by their, when they're looking for digs and as a God student.
Yeah.
And the rest is scary.
Exactly.
I didn't sleep a wink, Katie. I didn't sleep a wink last night.
Look, I'm not surprised you didn't. But he actually rewrote that story in another story called Mr. Justice Harbottle. And that is collected in A Glass Darkly.
Okay.
You can get that. It's out from Oxford University Press as well. Great book to curl up to on these kind of cold, chilly, creepy, dark nights.
And is there a lot of interest in Irish Gothic literature, Katie?
Huge amount. I did my PhD in it. There are a few scholars in the field working in this specifically. I think that Ireland has always had a very strong supernatural tradition.
Yeah.
And you can really see that in the literature. Are you familiar with Museum of Literature Ireland?
Of course I am. Molly. Yeah, and Stephen's Green in Dublin,
Yes, exactly. Lovely museum. I'm actually working with them right now on a collection of ghost stories from the Irish tradition, all the way from the 19th century up to the contemporary era, called A Visit from the Banshee. It's a collection that I've edited, and we're launching it at the museum on the 8th of November. And so there really is still, people are reprinting these stories, they're reading these stories. It's still a living tradition, thriving tradition as well.
Okay, and you recommend people who are interested in A Glass Dark Place, is that the correct title?
In A Glass Dark Place.
And then Uncle Silas, and the reason why people might be attracted to Uncle Silas, because it's a long time since I read it, it's before it was ever invented, it's a locked room murder mystery.
It is.
And
it
as you know, the world, every city in the world has a locked room murder mystery experience. You go in and you get locked in this room.
Absolutely.
And you pay money, Katie.
it all started from a man who was, born on Lower Dominick Street, but grew up in Ballyfermot.
Yeah, chapel is it there, and then has a road called after him. Where is he buried?
He's buried in Mount Jerome, Cemetery in Dublin.
Okay.
It's fitting because he was known as the Invisible Prince of Dublin. Mm-hmm. After his wife died in 1858, he became increasingly reclusive. And there's sort of this mythology surrounding him that he would, he owned newspapers and he was a journalist and he had children that needed to be introduced in society. So he wasn't completely reclusive. But, people would say that he could only be found at night when he would wander out to some of these book stalls and read about demonology or read about astrology or all the kind of weird occultist things.
Well, then he would have been at home in Anger Street and Camden Street and Wexford Street because people only go out at night up there now,
It's a very, very
lively part of the city.
Yeah.
Very busy and buzzy and good fun. Thanks indeed, Katie Mishler.